Well, there you are, here in the second full week of July. Welcome to Redemption's Table. I'm Robert Barge, your host. I hope and pray you're having a refreshing summer. We just passed the halfway mark of 2023. And I know we got a few months to go before we reach the end. I'm not rushing the year at all, but I do something at the end of every year. I ponder this question. What was the most significant moment, event, focus of that particular year? As I look back on 2021, anybody remember that far back? We had just passed the one-year mark of a worldwide pandemic. For some reason, I think we've blocked that long season we all shared together. I think we've blocked that out. I remember the very first time my counselor introduced the concept of personal trauma to me 12 years ago. My reaction to him about that word surely must have resembled an alcoholic's reaction and aversion to the introduced possibility. I think he might be an alcoholic. So when he said, "I think you, Robert, are borderline PTSD," I said, "Isn't that something only soldiers come down with, come home with?" I tried to deny the word trauma, that I might be a prime candidate for PTSD. Now, according to the statistics, the years of 2020 and 2021 made us all candidates for PTSD. And now, don't we sometimes live as if that never happened? That we dealt with it and that we've moved on and it's in the past. So starting today and off and on between upcoming table conversations in the next weeks and months ahead, I want to go back to the spring of 2021 when I felt drawn to speak through the Old Testament book of Job at a midweek gathering I founded several years ago called Broken Worship Gathering. The series was called Wrestling with God in the Season of Job. And when I looked back at the end of 2021, I saw this was the most important thing that I participated in, teaching this very special study series on the Old Testament book of Job. Each week, we took seven of Job's 42 chapters and hit the highlights of Job's story. And I will be sharing the recorded teachings from those Tuesday nights back in April and May of 2021. Because I believe for many of us, we are still wrestling in that season. And hey, if you don't want to wait for all six of these Job episodes to drop, you can go to Redemption's Table YouTube page. Bet you didn't even know that existed. And scroll back to April, May of 2021, and you will find all six seasons of this special series. Now, a few opening thoughts. If you know of someone who is going through their own personal season of Job right now, would you be a good friend to them and copy the link of this podcast wherever you happen to listen and share this electric, guttural, honest, real engagement with what has become one of my favorite books of Scripture? And if you listen to music on Spotify, you can find a special playlist of curated music that goes along with this Job series called, what else? Wrestling with God in the Season of Job. This opening and closing song by my friend Ryan Proudfoot, pastor of a relatively new church start in inner city San Antonio, is on that playlist. I want to thank Ryan personally for sharing his song, A Man Named Job. So go check it out. Here we go.
Once was a man with all the possessions that this world could hold. The father's riches seemed to overflow, but all he wanted was you. A blameless man who feared God turned away from evil. The greatest man his land had ever known, but all he wanted was you. tempter came to try to set the Lord against his soul, to strip away all that he'd ever owned, but all he wanted was you. Yeah, just you. Just you. To tell him all the news, that everything has been lost, there's nothing left to you. Knees to the ground, he rips his shirt and starts to shave his head. Looks to the sky and then somehow he says, all I need is you. Come one by one, he's covered head to toe. Among the ashes, still somehow he knows, all I need is you. Curse God and die, so she says, but does she really know that shall we take good from God and not evil? Not evil from you.
Still in pandemic. I have to remind ourselves of that, and it is still affecting lives. And I know we have gone through a lot this past year, and hopefully get a chance to share some of those stories. Although when we talk tonight, obviously that 25 minutes could be filled up with one person's story. I want to hear your stories. I want to hear how this year has impacted you. Second thing in the leading up to this, because we are fearfully and wonderfully made, we all have different personalities. We all have different God wirings. And we have been impacted in different ways through this season because of that. I just recently learned. For the first time in 7.5 years, I started going to counseling again in 2020, middle of 2020. One of the things, the best part of it, I learned, I took a Myers-Briggs. Never done that before. I know what I am now. I am an INFJ. There's 16 different personality types, and that is introverted, introspective, feeling, judging. Three of those are on the introverted scale. The last one, the judging, is on an extroverted scale. And I'm like, okay. And I learned this about myself. That is the rarest of all personality types. I always knew I was strange and weird. And I know now, and it kind of helped me get a handle on, okay, to understand yourself gives you a handle on why you're dealing with things the way you're dealing with them. Now I know why I feel, every time I speak, why I feel like an unopened bottle of Dr. Pepper that just fell on the floor all shook up, because if you ever open a bottle of Dr. Pepper, it's gonna, and that's kind of how I start things, especially new that I've never done before. It's me. And I felt like, okay, after 61 years, I know who I am. Okay, I can deal with that. So we're all fearfully and wonderfully wired. We've been through a year, and we all respond to different seasons, trauma, differently. We all may walk through the same season. We may even experience the same things. And for some of us, it's going to strengthen our resolve to swim strong against the current, and some of us are going to flounder. Sometimes it's a single event. Sometimes it's an accumulation of your life's journey. I went 51 years and nothing got to me. I mean, you know, I went through the same thing that everybody goes through, you know, my ups and downs, that's what life is all about. But it went 51 years, and in 2011 was my first season of Job, and I went through it for 2 years and it laid me out. And in 2020, whenever we shut everything down, there was something about being in place for the first 2 months of that time, March and April. My job was not important. I still laugh like, it's not important, I'll tell you. And so I was there, and I began to get the sense of, I've lived this before. I remember when Ahmaud Arbery
When I first saw that video of him shot down in the street in Brunswick, Georgia, that got to me. And things began to have an impact on me, and then the whole year just unraveled from there. And it was a rough season. That's part of why I returned to counseling. I'm like, you know, and I believe, firm believer, everybody needs to go to counseling. Find yourself a Christian counselor. Find yourself someone and talk to. Jimmy is a Christian counselor, okay? You know he's going to get that plug tonight. But find someone. And I was looking at the statistics. The statistics are we're more stressed in our society than ever before. We're more angry than before. It has been an impactful season. We will be dealing with years from what we've just gone through, and we're not out of it yet. We still don't know. God alone knows what's coming. So here's the story of Job. Maybe you know this story. I'm pretty sure everybody here knows the beginning of the story. Maybe you know the conclusion when God finally shows up. But the part of us, the story that we probably don't know as well is the midsection. All the dialogue that Job has with his three friends. And then a fourth one shows up before God shows up. And it's just this constant back and forth. And you know, there's a lot of banter going on. There's a lot of jabs back and forth. I encourage you to read it out loud, some of it. I did that the other day, and here's what I discovered. Man, this thing has a rhythm like a boxer's rhythm. I mean, you read it, and it just flows, and it's like, and it's a fight. Job's in a fight. His friends add to the fight. He's in a fight with God. It just has that weight to it. And it's that center part we often want to avoid in print and in real life. Have you asked the question the last few months, like a question like this? Pandemic, what have you come to teach me? God, what have you come to teach me in this season? Have you asked that question? What is it that I need to learn in this season? Because God never wastes a season. If you haven't asked that question, I encourage you to ask it and then listen. That takes time, that takes patience, and here's how we're wired. Come on, from the get-go when this thing started, what was our prayer? Get this over with. As soon as possible, let us get back to normal, whatever that is. And I think Job is a very worthwhile book to look into. I have three personal brushes with Job. I just find these odd. I'm just throwing this out there. In 1972, the January Bible study was Job. I have the book. It had to be 8th grade, 7th grade. What year did your dad come? What years were your dad at Macedonia Baptist?
72 to about 75.
Then it's a good possibility your dad was the one that taught this study. And here's the thing about this. It's the only... Baptists have this thing called January Bible Study, and it's the only one I remember. I'm 8th grade. This is kind of heavy reading in the middle, so that's odd to me. When I went to college, Samford University, one time I tried out for the play. It was a campus-wide, 4,000 students, campus-wide play. I tried out, auditioned for a play, and I was cast in one of the three roles, or the three main roles. It was a play based on Job. JB was the play. I was cast as Satan. Typecasting. And then in 2011, and this may be one of the top 10 weirdest things about me, I find this weird, but I slept. When my wife left, I slept with the book of Job open for about 4 months, just in bed. And that was back 10 years ago. I could get up in the middle of the night and read without having to have reading glasses. Can't do that now. But I opened that book, and I read through that book, and I underlined things in that book that just grabbed me because suddenly I was living his story. Wherever it connected with me, it connected with me deeply. And I studied it. One of the first books I studied when I returned to the table was I spent 4 months studying Job and just looking at this. So this book has just always had it's always been in my life. It begins... Verse 1, in the land of Uz, there lived a man whose name was Job. The man was blameless, upright, he feared God, he shunned evil, and it gives us this introduction. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters. Tells us about his family. But it all begins, there lived a man whose name was Job. And I think this is interesting. We find very quickly, verse 4, it says, find those glasses. It says his sons used to take turns holding feasts in their homes, and they would invite their three sisters to eat and drink with them on their birthday. When a period of feasting had run its course, Job would send and have them purified. Early in the morning, he would sacrifice a burnt offering for each of them, thinking, perhaps my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. And this was Job's regular custom. This is very telling right here, what he prays for. You know, perhaps my children have cursed God. This is a big deal to Job, and rightly so. And more on that in just a minute. So we have that opening. Verse 8 says, one day the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. What's he doing there? This is odd. This is one of the oddest things to me about the whole book. And what's he doing there? He's doing the same thing here as he was doing in Luke chapter 22. Do you remember the night before Jesus died? What did Jesus warn Simon Peter about? He said, Peter, you're going to betray me. And here's how he put it to him. He says, Simon, Satan has asked to sift you as wheat. Well, hello. That's what he's doing there. He may be prince of the world. He may be, I love the way Eugene Peterson puts it, he may be designated accuser. That's his job, is what he does. But he has to submit before the sovereign Lord from time to time to check in. And here he is. He doesn't show up here before God because he wanted to. He shows up because he has to. Let's just pause right here and say there's a lot of questions in this book. That's one of the things I noticed this time around. Actually, the seven chapters you were to read, there are 46 questions in those seven chapters. Job asked the majority of them. He asked 29 of them. God asked the first two questions. First question, where have you come from? He's asking this of Satan. Where have you come from? Satan said, I've been wandering up and down throughout the earth. Now, 2 Chronicles 16:9 tells us this about God. It says, for the eyes of the Lord range to and fro throughout the earth, that he may strongly support those whose hearts are committed to him. So God has to look. God gets to look. Satan has to walk it. Satan has to hoof it. He's out here gathering information. He has lots of help. Scripture tells us there are emissaries. There are demons. Believe it, there are demons. There are angels. They're real. You may never actually see one in your lifetime, but they're real. Now, he sends out his emissaries. And here's what I want you to know about God. God is omniscient. Satan is not. I learned this 10 years ago. This is one of the discoveries to my first 2 years of going through the Job season. Satan is not omniscient, but he takes very good notes. And I can promise you, he's made book on you. He knows each. He has. I'm not worried about the government having a book on me or file on me, but this troubles me that the enemy has a book on me. And I'll tell you how I know that. He goes after the good that your heart desires. That's what he goes for. What is he going for in America today? What is he going for over and over again? What did he go for in my life? He went for my family. He knew that was most precious to me. He's not omniscient. He takes very good notes. And he's doing the same thing here with Job. We'll find that out in just a second. So God says, hey, where you come from? Second question, God says, have you considered my servant Job? Satan asks his questions. He says, yeah, I've considered him. He says, you know what? Does Job fear you for nothing? Nah. Have you not put a hedge around him and his household and everything he has? You have blessed the work of his hands so that his flocks and herds are spread throughout the land. But stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. Remember back in verse 5, what was Job worried that his children might have done? Curse God? He's saying, you touch him, he's going to curse you. Job doesn't know any of this going on. God says, okay, you have permission. In verse 13, it says, one day, when Job's sons and daughters were feasting and drinking wine at the older brother's house, Job got four messengers. One day. this book, first chapter, these two things. There was a man, and there came a day. That's how some versions read. There was a person created in the image of God, and there came a day. And I promise you, for every one of us, there will come a day. It's part of life. Joys, sorrows, good times, sufferings. There lived a man, there came a day. He received four messengers. First messenger showed up and said, "The Sabaeans have carried off your 500 oxen, yoke of oxen, your 500 donkeys. Lost some of your livestock." Right after that, messenger number two. "A lightning strike destroyed your 7,000 sheep. 7,000 sheep gone." That's hard message, back-to-back message to hit. Number three, "The Chaldeans have raided your 3,000 camels." Wow, you're telling me everything I have is gone? And there's only one messenger left each time to send the word. What is going on? And then comes the fourth and final message. And I'm sorry, this would put me down right here. "An F5 tornado killed your 10 children." They're gone. You've lost your entire family. It says Job got up. He tore his robe. He shaved his head. He fell to the ground in worship. And I read this and I go, wow. This reminds me of that closing scene in Castaway. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie. It's a great redemption film. Tom Hanks been stuck on an island for years. By the time he gets back to civilization, everything's moved on. His fiance's already married. Everything's gone. He's lost everything. He gets a chance to start over again, and he goes out to the middle of West Texas. There's a crossroads out in the panhandle of West Texas. I've studied that crossroads. I've been there at a time of joy. I've been there when it's bottomed out, and you can see forever in four different directions. And I'm thinking of Tom Hanks at this moment, because here's what comes out of his mouth. He says, "Naked I came into this world." Job looks back. "Naked I will depart." He looks forward. And then he looks up. "The Lord gave, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." This is astounding to me. This is admirable. It's almost unbelievable. I know the truth of what Job says. I love the song that Jimmy sang a few moments ago. I love that song. I do. I've been through the desert. I've been through the good days. I know the truth of what he says. I have a hint of the taste of the kind of faith that Job has. And I might say, under similar circumstances, I don't know what I would do. I might say the same thing, but I guarantee you, when I go home, when that door closes, I'm going to say something else. And I'm going to hold back just a little bit because of ears here. You just think of the worst word possible. That's coming out of my mouth. My neighbor in the duplex there, we have well-built walls. But in the last year, I would not be surprised if I walked over to Tyler and said, "Tyler, have you ever heard me say this word?" Tyler would probably say, "Oh yeah, I've heard you say that a few times." There's no sugarcoating this. There's no sugarcoating grief. I'd be saying crap, but I wouldn't be saying crap. I think sometimes, you know, we got to let people grieve. This is harsh. This is hard. And then this chapter ends. "In all this time, Job did not sin by charging God." Chapter 2, round 2. We're going to go through this one a little quicker. We don't know how much time lapsed between these two chapters, but I think quite a length of time. Job has lost everything. He's grieving. Satan shows back up. God asks his same two questions. "Hey, where have you come from?" "Same place I came from last time. And what do you think of my servant Job?" At this point, I would wish God does not ask that question about me. But that's part of the deal of being his servant. He doesn't say, "Have you seen my slacker, Job?" "Have you seen my servant, Job?" He still maintains his integrity. God put in an integrity report on him. You know, he still maintains it, though you incited me against him to ruin him without any reason. And Satan says, "You touch his skin. You've allowed me to touch everything, but you haven't touched the flesh. You haven't diseased him." God says, "Okay, you can't take his life." Again, he's having to ask permission. I don't understand why God allows this. And I don't understand why Job's on earth. He doesn't have privy to the Job wasn't written yet. He doesn't know about the first two chapters of Job. He's just going, what the heck is going on? And along comes Job's wife. You know, he's hanging on to his integrity. Satan does his thing. It says that, you know, he has sores break out all over his body. And then it says Job took a piece of pottery and went and sat in an ash heap and scraped himself to get some relief. His wife said to him, are you still holding on to your integrity? Curse God and die. Now I want to pause right here and say this. For the first time in my life, I have never thought about Job's wife grieving as well. And I think it's some of the way that it has always been taught in church. How dare her say, curse God and die? How dare you be the instigator in this? She lost her 10 children too. And I'm saying, give her some grace. Give her some grace. He says, why? You know, what do you want me to do? Curse God and die? And then he says this. One of the most powerful things he says, shall we accept good from God and not trouble? Now, again, I got to go, wow, this impresses me more than blessed be the name of the Lord. Because he's had some perspective. He sat in it for a while, and he's able to have this perspective. Shall we accept good from God and not, wow, I'm in trouble. I got 5 minutes left. Ooh, okay. Well, you know, can we, I'm wowed by that. It says, in all this, Job did not sin in what he said. Along come Job's three friends. End of the chapter there. They show up. They see him from a distance. They go, wow, look how bad he looks. He's emaciated. He's disfigured. We don't recognize him. And it says that they came down and they sat on the ground with Job for 7 days and seven nights. No one said a word to him because they saw how great his suffering was. For 7 days, they don't say a word. And again, we usually compliment these guys for being quiet for 7 days. There's a little bit more going on in the story than this. And I will just say, I'm not this good a friend to sit with somebody for 7 days this long. This is a long time to say. You know, you just want to say something to try to bring comfort. I'm not good at being quiet like that, but their presence is there. I'm not this good a friend for these 7 days, but I'm not this bad a friend after they finally open up and speak, start talking. And suddenly I realize what's going on here. That 7 days has purpose. 7 days and seven nights was the time you spent in mourning for the dead. They're not sitting there absorbing his pain. And Job suddenly realizes in that 7 days, these guys aren't here to comfort me. They're here to bury me. And in chapter 3, he opens up his mouth and he speaks. And what does he do? First thing he says out of his mouth, damn September 19th. That's my birthday. Damn the day of my birth. Damn. May the calendar be reduced to 364 days. Strike that one. That's, you read these verses. Take it out. Curses the night I was born. Why did this ever happen? And he starts, he shifts from that asking four why questions. Why this? Why? And he's asking questions that only God can answer. And it's okay to ask God why questions. As long as we understand God does not owe us an explanation. And some of these why questions, the second one kind of gets in my grill a little bit because he says, you know, why wasn't I stillborn? Why wasn't I a miscarriage? And I'm like, oh, that hurts because I have a granddaughter in heaven named Rory Capri who was a miscarriage. And yet at the same time, I'm like, pour some grace on the man. He's grieving. Let him, you know, we say things and it's just grief. But it's got to get out. And then he says this toward the latter part of verse 3. Verse 25, he says, what I feared has come upon me. What I dreaded has happened to me. What? I think this is very telling. I think Job exposes something about himself and he exposes something about the human condition. You get the gist of what he's saying? He's saying, I've always feared this would happen. I always knew this day would come. I was just waiting on the other shoe to drop. I knew God's goodness wasn't going to last. Come on, Job. You're the most affluent man in the land. You're blessed. You have God's favor. You have affluence. You have influence. You're blameless. You're upright. You fear God. You shun evil. God even said this about you. He said, there's no one on earth like him. And yet he still feared God would let him down some way, sometime. I'm like, wow, don't we do the same thing? When it's good, in the back of our mind, we're like, eh. You know what this tells me? It tells me Job was human. Chapters 4 and 5, Eliphaz speaks up. He says some good things. He says some true things. It's just his timing's off. I mean, some of the things he says is like spouting platitudes at a funeral. Here's a good one. God is good! Expecting. What's the expected reply? All the time. There were some times in my 2 years, somebody came up, God is good, and I'm like, God's good, you're annoying. You're insensitive. You're stupid. Don't tell me that now. You don't heal a broken heart by discussing theology or logic. You don't heal a broken heart with pious bumper sticker platitudes. You heal a broken heart with love. Real quickly, Eliphaz, he's just all over the map. He can't quite decide what, you know, he's going to say. One minute he's acknowledging that brokenness comes to everybody, and the next minute he's saying, ah, but brokenness is connected to sin. You did something wrong, Job. I know you did. And in verse 27, the crowning telling moment of his little two chapters here, he says, we have examined this, and it is true. So hear it, Job, and apply it to yourself. You hear what he's saying? He's saying, hey, me and the other two guys, we had a committee meeting on the way here, and we felt that God was leading us to tell you this. So because we've heard from God, and you haven't right now, just accept it. When you're grieving, I'll tell you this, creativity goes out the window. Gone. But at the same time, take a lot of notes, because suddenly metaphors come pouring in. And you need to write those things down, because that's God speaking. They get really, really sharp. And Job here in chapter 6 starts out with, you know, man, all my troubles feel like if you took all the sand and sea, that's how heavy it feels. And then he says, the arrows of the Almighty are in me. So there's a couple of metaphors there. And ultimately what he wants God to show up and vindicate him. And then he turns on his friends. He says, what kind of friends are you? He makes two requests of his friends. Job 6:24. Hey, teach me. And then verse 6:28, he says, look at me. So they're not even giving him eye contact. He's reasoning out loud. He's talking to his friends. And one of the things I admire about Job that his friends never do, Job prays to God even as he's crying out and he's talking. I've been allotted months of futility is what he said. Verse 7 of 7. Remember, O God, that my life is but a breath. And so I'm not keeping quiet one bit. I brought the message with me. And I'm almost done. We're fixing to let you talk. That's why I'm glad he gave you a warning. I remember this hit home to me. And from the message. And so I'm not keeping one bit of this quiet. I'm laying it all on the table. My complaining to high heaven is bitter but honest. Are you going to put a muzzle on me, God, the way you quiet the sea and still the storm? I'd rather strangle in my bedclothes than face this kind of life any longer. I hate this life. Who needs any more of this? The Amplified Version says, I loathe this life. I'll tell you, in the last 6 months, I found a couple of times in journey for a period of time, for a day, where I actually said, I loathe life. Now, you know me. That's not me. But sometimes the weight gets so heavy. And he ends this section, he says, don't you have better things to do than pick on me, God? Huh? I mean, come on. Why are you making a federal case out of me? Why don't you just forgive my sins and start me off with a clean slate? The way things are going, I'll soon be dead. You'll look high and low, but I won't be around. You know what that reminds me of? The old Brooks and Dunn song. You better kiss me, God, because you're going to miss me when I'm gone. You did it. And off goes the story.
They travel for days to give him counsel now, but they don't know what they say, they only tear him down. He starts to question their ways, it seems they've led him wrong. But then he starts to complain, that's when we hear the sound. A voice that comes from the wind is here to question you. And since you tried to contend, I hope you hear the truth. That all the wind, stars and skies, the raging seas, the waters rise. You can't deny I'm the one that all this has come through. Cause I'll always be and I've always been. Wherever you've gone, I've been with you then. Humble your heart, fall on your knees. Trust in my ways when still you can't see. When I can't see, I trust you. Joe, he falls into the ground, covers his hand to his mouth so words won't utter out. My God, your wonderful ways no man can understand. So now I'll give you my days, cause all I need is you.